Hi, Lance.
Hi, JS.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing? Doing
good.
Well?
Yeah, doing well.
Good.
So, I'll share a secret with you. We recorded another episode yesterday, but for people listening, it will be like 2 weeks.
Oh my gosh, the magic of technology.
Yes. All right, so...
That's it? That's the secret?
Yeah, okay. That's the secret.
Nice.
So... Today we wanted to talk about technical debt because it's something that can be painful and some people don't realize that you get technical debt if you're not careful.
Jess, I have a question for you.
Damn, that's fast.
Are you in debt?
No, I'm not.
I'm not sure because if you're in software, you most likely have technical debt.
That was a trick question.
So what is technical debt?
So was it a question like I need to answer?
Yes.
Okay. So I guess you did something and in the future you'll need to pay a price for it.
Wow. Yep. That's very true. Just like in real debt, if you loan a bunch of money, you have to pay it back later. Except this time it's like engineering resources and costs.
Which is directly correlated to money.
Exactly.
So in the end, it's exactly the same thing as taking a loan in a bank.
Yes. Well, okay, so Wikipedia definition, because if it's on Wikipedia, it's truth.
Yes.
Is that technical debt is the concept that reflects the implied cost of additional rework caused by choosing an easy solution now instead of using a better approach that would take longer. So as you mentioned, there's the metaphor to financial debt where you amass interest on things you need to loan to be able to do things with them now.
Okay, so it's a trade-off between shipping and doing it right.
Yes, exactly. But usually when you ship, you keep that thing and you would usually want to build on top of it afterwards. And that's where you pay the interest in that if it's not built on solid foundations, it's likely going to take longer to implement later.
All right. So to be clear, you get technical debt when you're working on a real long-term project. 2 weeks ago, when we talked about personal projects, I guess you don't get technical debt there.
I guess not. And in a sense, like game studios will release a game. And I have no idea how game studios work or operate in any way, but I assume that other than the engine and stuff, when they release a game, it's done. It never gets updates. It's put onto a disc and shipped out to other people.
Well, there's updates, right? And
yeah,
there's DLCs.
True. Yeah, but I guess back in the day when they shipped a little cartridge to you,
mm-hmm.
like the software was put onto the cartridge and it's done and you never have to revisit it ever again. In which case, you don't ever have to pay your debt because you never have to see that code again.
Right. So as long as you don't try to do DLC, the video game industry is like debt-free.
I guess so. But yeah, I think there is a like important point here is that unlike in real life financial debt, you don't have to pay the debt unless you want to start using it in that you only pay the debt if you change your old software. If it never changes, then you can ignore it for intents and purposes, right?
Yeah, because let's be fair, we all know people that work like in a bank and they're saying like, yeah, this like Perl code base is there for the last 20 years and no one knows how to touch it.
Yeah. And oftentimes the issue is when they need to add functionality to it, that's when no one knows how anymore, right? So the TLDR is technical debt is when you do something quick and dirty to unlock some specific functionality or some desired feature in the short term, but you're compromising on actual good software engineering practices, which will bite you in the long term.
All right. So I guess here there's like a combat between like developers / engineer versus like project people.
In a sense, I guess. So one way to think about it is that you're all working on the same project, right? It's just that developers have some sort of insight that non-technical people don't. Like your product is of some derived quality, whereas non-technical folk only see the outside, right? They don't see the inner workings.
Like the final product.
Right. So you could have two final products, one of them that's built well and can be extended and maintained, and another one that isn't. Externally, they could operate the same, but internally, it means that maintaining this and the complexity of this and changing in the future might be very different. So we have those two, like there's an external software quality versus an internal software quality. Although in the sense, like in a business sense, for one point in time, for one deliverable, it might be like the same, but ongoing costs might take longer, right? And refactoring only addresses internal quality. And so usually when you're operating a business, a software business, and you don't see the point of refactoring, it's because you haven't seen the code or don't understand what's under there, right? So I do think there's those two parallel levels.
So what the user sees and what the developer see.
I do think that eventually the internal quality like leaks out to affect.
Yeah, because if your code base is really bad, well, I guess you might have security issues. Performance
issues, right? It'll take longer, more resources to develop the same thing.
Yeah, right. So that was my next point. So at some point, this affects product vision because you can't ship as fast as you could at the beginning.
Yeah. Usually, though, like your software product users don't care, right? Whether it's like the most beautifully architected Haskell code or it's like some script kiddie that threw together something. Like as long as it does the same thing and has the same external characteristics, it doesn't really matter. So in that sense, like the success of your product is not directly tied to how much debt you have, but I feel like it's more of an ongoing thing where it's like if ever you want to change that in the future.
So now, the long-term success.
Yeah, like ongoing success, I would say.
Yeah.
But that's why I do think like ultimately it's a business decision, tackling technical debt or not. should be a product decision.
Right. Because while you refactor or try to fix your debt, you don't do new features.
Yeah, and also recognizing that if you don't refactor, your future product might be compromised is a product decision.
And then when you see compromise, you talk about like performance, security.
And maintainability and changeability and tests or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. So after all this discussion, JS, would you say that tech debt is bad?
Yes, it's bad and we should never do it.
Well, surprise, surprise, you already have tech debt.
What do you mean?
Well, I would say that like there's some level of debt in every code, in anything you write as software, even if it's only due to like decay of software and trends, right? It's very much a social thing too in that like, if you developed some COBOL, perfectly architected COBOL code 40 years ago and didn't change it, it's still technical debt now, right? Because, so everyone has it.
Yeah, because no one knows how to work on it or update it.
Yeah, so it's definitely a social thing. But it's also not always bad in that sometimes, like, when you buy a house, you usually put a mortgage on your house and you accumulate debt there, right? Mm-hmm. And, like, you do that to be able to afford a house now.
Right.
Right? And if that's important to you because of investment reasons or you don't want to pay rent anymore, like it's a valuable investment which you pay interest on, but in the long term.
So I guess we could translate it to software here, is if you take technical debt and you deliver a better product, you can get more money to have more developer to tackle the technical debt.
Yeah, or if you just for a proof of concept or you want to be first to market on something, right?
Which is valuable.
Yeah, definitely valuable. But yeah, if you employ it strategically and you're aware of the technical debt that's happening, it can be good.
So in your sentence, you said when you are aware, who's you in your sentence?
Well, ideally, it would be like organizationally aware of it.
Okay. So everyone needs to know that you take that debt.
Yeah, but it's also even hard to recognize, right? Like, oftentimes it's like hindsight is 20/20. Hindsight is 20/20, where you see only afterwards that you amassed this big ball of mud and you don't know what to do with it.
I guess developers can have the feeling of, this might be costly in the future.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Sometimes, even like, code smells. is that, but in miniature form, right, where you look at something and you say, like, I have some indication that this pattern or this usage
won't scale.
Won't scale, or is not good, or is just a sign of bad practice.
Do you have an example?
Oh, what's a code smell? Oh, man. A line that's 500 characters long.
All right.
And or a 10,000 line file in your software.
Yeah. We have all seen those files.
Yeah, yeah, they always exist. That's the thing. Like, no matter what, you'll end up with tech debt somehow, no matter what code you write. It's just, I guess, the level of it.
Right.
So have you heard, I hadn't heard of this before. Have you heard of Martin Fowler's 4 tech debt quadrants?
Nope.
I hadn't heard of it either, but it's pretty interesting in that he does make the distinction that it's something that you can kind of choose to do or choose to think of. And he separates it as tech debt is done either recklessly or prudently, as well as deliberately and inadvertently.
Could you define those words? I'm not sure to grasp how they're applicable here.
I guess reckless. So if you design, maybe I'll go through the examples and it might make sense. But if you design your software product deliberately but recklessly, it would mean that you're making the conscious decision to ignore your tech debt.
Okay, so you're aware of it.
Yeah, you're aware of it, but you just say, we don't have time for this. Like, for some reason, you do not address it.
So, I know it's there, but I need to ship tomorrow.
Yeah, and so deliberately and prudently is more like, I know that it's there, and I know that there's tech debt, but we'll keep it in mind, we'll write it down, and we'll deal with it in the future, in a sense.
So this one was deliberate and prudent.
Yeah. So you're careful of it, and you're cognizant of it. You see the tech debt coming down, but you can still decide to not deal with it.
So it's pretty much the same as the previous one, but you postpone.
Yeah, you postpone it, yeah. And you're aware of it. It's not reckless, right?
All
right. That's why I do feel like they're both about awareness and recognizing, identifying tech debt, and the words aren't that great at describing them,
mm-hmm.
but it's still interesting in that there's it's multifaceted, this problem.
Right.
The next is inadvertent and reckless. And that's when you have no idea what you're doing.
That's
basically
my favorite.
Yeah. It's basically when you don't see it happening and you don't address it in the future. And you just don't know what you're doing and you're actively causing tech debt.
So I would say most tech company.
Probably. I mean, I don't know what's out there, but probably, yeah. If your company was run by code monkeys.
Yeah. So you just don't care. You just ship code nonstop.
Yeah. And the other one is inadvertent and prudent, which is when you didn't realize it was happening at the time, but you're careful to, in the future, now can see what had happened. So, you didn't realize at the time while you were writing this tech debt that you were creating tech debt, but afterwards you identified it and said, I realize now that this isn't how we should have done it.
Right. So, at that point, you have the choice to refactor and fix it or not to do it.
Yeah. Or delay it for later or something.
Right. So, here, what's the best quadrant? What should I choose?
Oh, man. I guess it's up to you, right? And your priorities, again. Right? Usually, I feel like it's a good idea to be, to be prudent, in that you should ideally recognize it. Tech debt at any point in time, whether it's in the past or as a software engineer, you should think about this kind of stuff, right? I think it's your duty as the technical person.
So you're saying always be aware of tech debt.
Yeah, but then again, I don't know how much truth there is to this. It was more just of an interesting characterization by one of software engineering's most legendary icons, I guess.
Right.
But it is an interesting way to look at it in that some parts are a choice, some parts you don't realize. It makes it so that it's a little bit more nuanced,
mm-hmm.
right?
And let's be honest, you'll always do something which is bad and you don't realize.
Yeah, absolutely. So why not have no tech debt?
as I just said, I think it's impossible because you can't predict the future. Like, one good example, every time I see like a JavaScript code base, if it's older than like 2 or 3 years, it's always like, I find it a mess. And you always feel the urge to upgrade to the last technology or...
Aha! So you're saying one reason why tech debt might happen is because the technology changes.
Yeah.
Or you're not familiar with the technology or the new patterns in this technology.
Right.
So that's one reason. What's another reason do you think tech debt happens?
Well, if you're pushed to ship.
Yep. So you... time pressure or yep. some sort of business need.
Right.
Makes you compromise, I guess.
Right.
Apparently, the most common source of what is tech debt is that the requirements for what you're building weren't clear, or you just didn't understand the domain of what you're working in. You didn't model the problem properly.
Right. Well, I guess that's an easy one to get into, because most programmers won't like grasp the whole complexity of what they're doing.
Yep.
Like, for example, if you were working in an insurance company, you don't understand everything about insurance.
All of insurance, exactly. Yeah. And so you're building the wrong thing, I guess, or you're architecting the system with assumptions going in.
Right.
And the other one is, even if you did understand all of it, all of this domain, knowing which pattern or which architecture or how to structure your system is a different skill set. Which is hard to just know. You have to be like a right. programming god to know in advance all the things.
So I guess this one you can train by doing it more. At some point you'll get better
at it.
Yeah, nice.
So now that we've established that you have technical debt.
Nice.
Everyone gets this temptation to rewrite all the things.
Always.
What's your opinion on rewrites?
That's funny. So I've started to work on an open source project, Jellyfin, which is like a media server.
Mm-hmm.
And yesterday I was looking at the front end code, like, oh God, it's a mess. Like concatenating strings to create HTML and like, it's just unreadable. It's madness. So the first thing I'm telling myself, like, oh God, we should move to like React, Angular, or Vue or whatever popular thing, but like some structured framework. And the other end, I realized that it's totally impossible because like the code base is so huge, it would take years just to reach back the same level.
Yeah, usually you get that temptation because it's difficult to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
I find that rewrites are often, people think they can do better than what was there.
Which is often not even the case.
Not the case. And usually it's complex and difficult because you had to accommodate all of these special
mm-hmm.
things, like all of this knowledge and all of this domain knowledge that you've codified and put into this product. And that's why it's complicated. So if you go off and do your rewrite, you're either more likely than not, you're going to end up building something similar of similar complexity because you have to take into account all of these things, right?
So are you saying that if you add like a perfect knowledge of your requirements and everything, most people wouldn't be tempted to rewrite?
I feel like that's the case.
Okay.
I feel like that's the case. Unless if you're rewriting to decrease the complexity with the knowledge that you're going to be lose, like if you willingly know that you're going to remove some constraints because they're no longer valid anymore, maybe that makes sense and you would end up with a simpler system. But more often than not, if you want to replicate things exactly, you're only going to be changing the technology, which you can do incrementally anyways, as opposed to...
Well, that it's not necessarily true, right?
Yeah, I guess. You could... Oftentimes, you can figure out how to do it incrementally. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if you rewrite with the assumption that it'll be simpler, I feel like... Unless you had like horrible developers working on this in the first place, which had end patterns all over the place, you'll end up with a system of similar complexity.
All right. I don't know if I totally agree with you, but I see your point.
Other than rewriting it all and it being perfect afterwards, what are some approaches for dealing with tech debt?
All right. So I would say like you said, small refactor, incremental, adding new abstractions to like wrap some logic or patterns.
Yep.
So small refactors.
What I found is in coming up with some things to deal with technical debt, I realized it's all the things that you're told to do as a software developer are things which address technical debt.
Could you elaborate, please?
In that, like, write tests. Don't let bus factor happen.
What's a bus factor?
Oh, bus factor is like if one person in your organization is responsible for this super critical component and they get hit by a bus. It's a bit morbid, but if it, God forbid, if it happened, you wouldn't be able, no one would know how this works, right?
Right, right.
It would be this complete black box, especially if it's complex, that no one can deal with anymore.
So how do you solve that?
Having everyone know at least tangentially, like not real single point of failure, basically.
Okay.
But yeah, like keeping things dry, don't repeat yourself, uncoupling systems.
So you can change only one at a time.
Yeah, but all of this like software engineering, all of these patterns that like all design patterns are there to be able to efficiently and like model software in ways that represent your scenario and are flexible. And so I feel like inherently they should solve technical debt at the same time.
Interesting. I guess at this, if you start by doing some good pattern, you should have less tech debt.
That's my impression. Tests are a big one though.
Why?
If you had a perfect system with no tests, would you feel comfortable changing it?
Well, if it's perfect, you don't need to change it.
No, but if it still needs to be maintained and you need to add new features in them.
It's harder.
Yeah.
But I guess here, having some static language versus dynamic language is kind of a self-described test suite.
Yeah, it definitely makes some sort of errors impossible. So I guess in those cases, you would just test less. Although just logic errors will still happen.
Sure, because your language can't fix your
your brain. Logic. Yeah. They can't take brain dump you. Yeah. But yeah, I think another thing you can do more from a personal side is if you see tech debt, speak up in that. If you, like, organization, this, I feel like this is a social and organizational business problem.
So, speak up to who?
Well, your team, your lead, your organization, however you want. But, like, as the technical person who is the only one who gets to deal with this on a day-to-day basis and has the insight to recognize it, if you don't say something, none of the product people will ever suggest that we should go refactor this, you know?
Or at least put people on that job.
Yeah. The one thing I like less about that, though, is that if you have like a team to deal with the tech debt, one is that it's, again, bus factory. Like, if all of them left.
Okay, sure. But at that point, you could say that the bus factor is everywhere. If your whole technical team left, everything is a bus factor.
Yeah, that's true. Although I do think that like it also just leads to inefficiencies, right? Like,
why?
Take this example. I'm going to make a conjecture that DevOps was born out of tech debt. In that software teams, developers, didn't see the problem that is operationalizing and maintaining their code.
Right, so they were just coding and saying like, hey, admin people, just make it run.
Yeah, and like neither of them had the context or knowledge to like deal with this problem, right? Whereas if it was a shared responsibility and everyone knew it and raised these issues as they were coming up, then you would have less tech debt, right?
So are you saying that everyone should become a prod eng?
Not really, but if you don't share the responsibility of like acknowledging it and communicating it generally and making it an organizational concern, you end up in these silos, right? Where you end up with like some person has to deal with tech debt that they didn't even write, you know? Like,
so they don't have the context to...
Yeah, they don't have the context to fix it and you end up in this mess, right?
All right. All right, so before we finish, I have a question for you. So I'll give you an hypothetical situation and tell me if it's tech debt.
Sure. All right. A fun game.
Yeah. Is this technical debt?
Is this podcast technical debt?
Oh, that's deep.
Yeah, no, probably not, I guess. What if, like, the MP3 format in the future
is no longer support? Oh, okay, let's not go there.
Okay, we can go on with your game. Yeah.
All right, so let's say your company running a Node.js application, and you had something that was really slow. Let's say sorting geographical data. So your solution would be to rewrite that part in an external module in C++ or Rust, because it's faster, right? Here I have air quotes, but it's kind of faster. So is this module tech debt?
I think in some sense it is, yeah.
Why?
I mean, if you're, one is that I doubt everyone dealing with this is as proficient in JavaScript and C++ or Rust as they were in just one of them. And so, that it adds friction to your system.
So here you're saying that the technical debt comes from the fact that it's harder to work on both modules at the same time.
Yeah, and that you're not accustomed to the technology necessarily. There's more patterns to learn. There are more. It's just a wider array of things to know.
All right. But if we look at, like, on the other direction, if this code base is a good encapsulation, so it's decoupled and it's actually faster, wouldn't it be the inverse of technical debt?
I guess all of these are, like, additive in a sense, right? Or, like, you can, some parts make it that it's more and other parts make it that it's less,
right?
But
so we don't have an absolute, like, this is a 3 debt points.
No, we don't, but I would still say that. So encapsulating it is better than not encapsulating it and just, like, including C++ libs at arbitrary points in your JavaScript program, right? Okay. Like, that's clearly worse, but it's still more, if you know what I mean, mm-hmm. in my opinion. And I would say that in this case, it's more of, again, like, you're taking on that debt to solve the business need, which is this needs to be faster. And that hopefully, I mean, people don't just accidentally rewrite things in C++.
Always do that.
Aware of that decision. But yeah, I would say it's some form of tech debt, yeah.
All right.
Do you think so?
Yes, I think I agree with you, is that on some point it's tech debt because it's more friction. And at the same time, it's not, because you actually solve other issues of, like, decoupling and speed, and, like, you're actually solving the problem with the right tool, because, like, Node maybe was not the right tool to solve some sorting issue, because, like, it's something that you should do, like, really bare metal, because it's algorithmic and you can do it fast.
Fair. Yeah, I can see that too. Yeah, I can see that too.
All right. So I guess we agree that we can't quantify things of, like, this is 3 debt points.
Exactly. So the TLDR is that there's tech debt everywhere. You can't see where it is or what it is. So just ignore it?
Question. All right. I really hope that's not what you get from our podcast.
Yeah.
But yeah, honestly, don't ignore it.
Yeah, no. I try to address it as soon as you
can
get your spidey senses that there's something there.
Not necessarily as soon as you see it, but as soon as you can.
Yeah. Well, again, it's a business decision, right?
Yeah, exactly. So,
but being aware of it is probably the first step.
Something I think I like is that seeing technical debt as a product, so you can prioritize it like any other product.
Yeah. I know a lot of teams do, like, 2 weeks of product work and one team of tech debt work. You know what I mean? So that it's actually incorporated into their daily routine of building the software product. So yeah, I would say that's definitely a fair assessment.
So I think we're done with
what
we had.
That's all we had to say about technical debt. It's everyone has an opinion about technical debt. So hopefully that clarified something. I mean, again, this is just our opinion, but
yeah. And if you have opinions, honestly, send us an email. I'm curious.
Yeah, we'll read them, I guess.
You'll see.
Yeah, you'll find out if we read them or not.
In like 2 years.
All right. Thanks, JS.
Thanks, Lance. See ya.
Bye.
You can contact us and find show notes on our website, randomlytyped.com.
The intro music is by Vansky.
Thank you, Vansky.
And thank you, listener, for indulging us.